Stroller.
It's going to be a good day, right? We're on our third interview with Janice Friedman and Mike Pita. Say hello, Janice.
How do you do? Welcome home.
Janice, you said when we walked in that you had some things to add in terms of the boards that you're on.
Yes. Okay. I don't believe I gave you the Alpha Epsilon Phi.
Yeah.
Okay, that's my national sorority. And I have been...
What is the name of it?
Alpha Epsilon.
Are you writing on that?
Phi. P-H-I.
You're asking questions.
We're the oldest Jewish sorority in existence.
Oh,
but
I
we
think
don't,
you mentioned that.
We don't go under anything but non-sectarian barriers today because many of our chaplains are all Christian. I have been on the National Council for 6 years, which is a nice long time. And this year I was the nominating committee chairman for the oncoming slate. And I'm thrilled to tell you girls that I called Beverly Hills 3 times and talked the Beverly Hills Bar Association president into coming on foundation.
Oh, good.
So it makes it exciting because in Beverly Hills they give scholarships and that's what our foundation is for, to take our funds and distribute them with meaningful scholarships, even to returning women who go to school after they've been out 30, 40 years.
Is that right?
Who decide they want some help. And it's a scholarship, a grant.
And what is the criteria for the scholarship?
You turn the request, it's a form, back to the foundation committee and they sit in judgment on you, the merit of your request.
Is it more financial merit or
financial?
Financial.
Strictly.
Jenna, I'd like to...
What is the limits of the amounts? Are there limits to the amount they'll give?
I think they do 2,000 or 3,000. I don't think more. But a lot of them. So, I mean, over the whole thing, they, you know.
That's good, too, right? That's good, too, right?
That's good, too. That's good too.
And they give scholarships to those who have not yet gone to college, too?
No.
Only?
No. If you've been to college, then you were an AFI. If you hadn't been to college, then you were not an AFI. It's a national sorority.
For their own sorority.
Right.
For their own members, though.
Right. Yeah. But by and large, I think maybe, no, for our own members.
It's not for their children or
no.
Janice, we know you went to Autodice. Where did you go to grade school?
Well, I was in the first graduating class of H.B. Davis. So that had to have been, I hate to do this backwards, but it was, I think,
you did?
If you were born in 1925, okay, then you would go into kindergarten when you were like 6, right? So that would be 1931. Okay, so then if you would do the first through sixth grade, about 1937, I guess we only went up to third grade at Davis School. So let's say that we went out of there, what, in 1934, okay, and went over to Colfax in 1934, and then went from Colfax 37 to Aldridge.
And that was
that makes sense. Time. Yes. That's the whole panoramic. And I liked Colfax. It was a great school. Cold to walk to.
And that was 4 times a day, right?
Oh, yes.
Went home for lunch?
We did go home for lunch.
Are there any specific friends or teachers or subjects that you liked?
No, that's Hazy. I remember we had a Miss Hunter. And there was a Miss Hunter who was the principal at that point. That was before Dr. Pregler. And Dr. Pregler was there, not in my time, but in my brother's time. No, my brothers went to Whiteman. Because at that point we lived on Whiteman Street. And I
Pregler?
Didn't. I went to Alderdice.
Was Pregler Colfax?
The principal
Dr.
was Dr. Pregler.
Where? Colfax?
Colfax. She was a legend.
Janet, I'd like to get a feel for the culture of Pittsburgh as you were growing up. Can you describe it to us a little bit? Perhaps things that you did for for entertainment.
Well, we had clubs and sororities and on weekends. Oh, the Manor was the big palace, the mecca of where people went Friday nights and Saturday afternoons. I worked in high school. I worked at Rosenbaum from the 10th grade on. And so I wasn't involved with too much running around, but all the young ones went to Joe Mazur's, or in the summertime we went out to Covert's to play miniature golf. And it was a much easier existence than today. We didn't have to spend money to have a good time.
What is Covert, COV?
It was a hand barbecue place that had a miniature golf course, and everybody would flock there because it was nice recreation.
Was it out of the city?
It was near the Pines, near North Hills, before North Hills became the mecca of the world.
How do you spell Covert?
COVERTS.
Right.
Do you have any feeling for the political arena at that time?
Upon coming out in the world, I was very big on Kennedy's campaign. Ted Kennedy, in 1980, I stood on the platform with him.
Is that right?
Uh-huh.
What did you do for the campaign?
I worked hard with the advanced team. That's what they called the lead team. But he lost, so it didn't matter.
He's still there. He's still around.
And he's still good. He's like reformed.
What about the health care or health services in the city?
I had several very meaningful things happen to me. My brother shot me in the eye with a BB in 1940. Mm-hmm. And in those days there was Dr. Thorpe, the world-renowned Harvey Thorpe. And when we went down to, Dr. Toloff went with us. Dr. Ed Toloff, and we went down, and it was around dinner time, and he met us in Montefiore Emergency, and he said, "Baby is in there." And they pulled it out with the magnet.
What kind of doctor was he?
Oh, ophthalmologist, Dr. Harvey Thorpe. Dr. Toloff was just a general practitioner, but a good doctor.
And he just went with you?
Yeah, he was friends with the folks.
What was he, T-O-L-O-F-F?
Uh-huh. He was friends with my team. And so the BB was in there, and my brother Ivan did it. And there was no scar, but he told me in those years, 1940, that you're going to have a cataract in later life, and I did. Had it after 4 years ago,
not
January.
Not the other eye? Not the other eye, too.
Not the other eye. Isn't it funny? Yeah. Traumatized eye. And that was an adventure. And I had pneumonia as a senior in Alderdice. But we made that. That was my trauma at the BB though.
But you went to private physicians for everything. I think you were asking what was the general nature of health care in the city.
What was it?
Yeah.
It was go to your own family doctor. Yeah. There were doctors available who would answer and return a phone call to you.
If you had to describe Pittsburgh while you were growing up, In just a sentence or two, or however long, how would you describe it?
It was wonderful, warm, simple. People weren't fighting among themselves for power and financial gain. It was not the same world. I would say that most of my life was in recovery, getting over World War II, doing without things in World War II that you didn't even miss. You did miss the fellas not being home, and the normalcy of getting married, and the normalcy of not having furloughs to contend with. I think the World War II was something really special to live through. It was tough.
Was your family affected in any way by the war?
My mother worked for the American Women's Volunteer Services that used to go down to the Salvation Army at the old Penn Station very late in the night some nights. She was a volunteer and a loyal one. She'd go as much as twice a week, and that was a lot, you know, for women to get around, and she didn't drive. So she was relying on other people to get her there.
What did they do with, was Penn Station then?
They gave the boys coffee and donuts and let them use the phone and just like a link with the nice people around who can be nice to you. And that was very rewarding. And we at Taylor Alderdice, as the first drum majorettes, raised so much money for selling war bonds. And last night on television, which was Tuesday the 14th, was very interesting because they did the history of the Hines family and they talked about Sarah Hines. And I remember so well how we twirled in that Hines house on the north side. And the more people that came, the more bonds we sold, we did so well. Makes you feel good.
So the Hines has supported this.
Oh, Hines was great to the whole North Side community. Yeah. Really.
Were you aware of what was going on with the Jewish people in Europe? Was there any awareness?
And there was a trauma, but it was I think American Jews were not organized enough to fight. Just try it today. Just try this crap today, and you would never see this. But all of the people who thought that the great white hope was Franklin Roosevelt found out he wasn't. That he was very troubled, and that he didn't like the Jews either. And that's how it goes. But the interesting thing is that these stories of the Holocaust, they happened to somebody else. They didn't happen to us. Thank God. My knowing family, we no doubt had relatives over there. There isn't any question in my mind, with my mother's name Schott, German, that we didn't have relatives over there. And it you just got through it. But we all know, and especially the people who have been connected with anybody in Federation, knows it's not going to happen again.
So there's a stronger organization in the States today.
Thank goodness for the UJF, the JNF, war bond. I mean the how do I want to say it? Bonds for Israel. That's where your armaments and everything are coming. And I want to tell you, we've got a wonderful country. We have to take care of it. We have to watch it. We don't need any uprisings over there. We don't need any communities torn apart the way that ultimately Pittsburgh could be torn apart. But the great hope and heart is that Rhoda Sholem's putting in, I think, a day school. Looks very good. Seems to be the trend that everybody wants their children and grandchildren to go to a Jewish day school. And if this be the case, there is no way that we're shrinking away and fading out the Reformed element. There are people who don't know from conservative or orthodox. And I really find strength, and I think the fact that we're doing yarmulkes and taluses at Road of Sholem. I mean, it's a new world out there.
Is that because the membership wants it or the rabbi?
The membership wants it.
So there's
oh, and the rabbi must be hearing this from every national organization, because we aren't the only reform that's doing this. I wish you could see Boca Raton. It is true, their figure, that 26,000 families in my daughter's temple. Is that unreal?
26,000 in her temple?
Family.
How big is the temple?
It's 26,000.
Families.
You sure?
In a temple?
Yes, doesn't that sound ridiculous?
People?
No. Families.
How big can it be?
It's very big. They don't all go. They use Florida Atlantic University for services. They don't all go. They have 3 bar mitzvahs on a Saturday. So it's showing you that there's migration to the South. South will rise again.
So your feeling is the Jewish community is healthy?
The Jewish community is sticking together. Now don't forget, we are a homogenized community today. We are accepting intermarriage because we're not cannibals. If the kids get along, there is nothing you can do about it, but hope that there's an agreement before the wedding, because after is too late. And if if this is it, so be it. And I really...
What do you mean there's a before the wedding, there's an agreement? Agreement about what?
How the children are going to be raised. What religion. I have a friend, a very close friend, Don Brockett, and he says everybody's a little bit Jewish. It's kind of true.
I believe that, too.
It's kind of true. And the beautiful part about it is that it can work, like it or not, it's here.
Do you think that the agreement for the children to be raised, are they being raised more Jewish?
I would say mostly. Even in the case of converts, it happened in my very own family, and it happened very funny. And do you have time for me to talk about it? My first cousin, Susie, lives in Detroit, and her son, Stephen, is just a doll baby. He's a dermatologist. And from childhood, he's going with Barbara Hetrick. I mean, from childhood. Well, the kids get married. He graduated from U of M Medical School, and Barbara graduated from her college. And before you know it, they got married in the Bloomfield Hills Women's Club. They had a minister, and they had a rabbi. And it was a beautiful ceremony. About 8 years ago. No, it's longer, because we just went to a bar mitzvah. About 13 years ago, Barbara came to my cousin Susie, whom she adores because she spoils her rotten, and said, I'm going to convert, Mother. I'm going for instruction, and I'm going to convert. She said, did you talk to your parents? She said, no. When I'm ready, I'll talk to my parents. Today, those people are so wonderful. It's like one happy family. The kids are all Jewish. And Barbara's unspoiled, wonderful. And her grandpa was a Supreme Court justice in Michigan. And what I'm saying to you, educated people accept Jews on their level of understanding. It's not that we're... Even if we are different, they know how to handle it better than maybe the lower end of the kind of a convert that you're finding. But it has to be decided. There's no big happy thing, and they celebrate everything. They don't celebrate Christmas. So my Susie's family worked out to be a very happy ending.
Good. I'm curious as to when you started noticing the Rodef becoming, I don't want to say, well, let's use the word more traditional.
Last 3 years, the last 2 years, and the last 1 year is when they started with the garb, wearing the stuff. And everybody was so shocked at services.
Do you know how it started then? I mean,
yeah, I don't know how it started. With Walter. Jacob.
Okay.
Yeah.
So after all these years.
Oh, yeah, because he was the president of the HUC.
Right.
And probably a lot of pressure was put on him, maybe even from the temples out, you know, in Beverly
So you think there was other Reformed temples that were...
I know they're doing it.
But they did it before it came to Pittsburgh?
See, take a man of the stature of Charles Bronfman. Charles Bronfman is an Orthodox Jew. Charles Bronfman, thank God, has the ability to save the Jewish people. He's very big and getting bigger. And he's as plain as can be when the General Assembly, which I told you I go to every one, but last year I didn't because of my illness. We did the one in Montreal. There are 22 Jewish day schools in Montreal. That's pretty good. And Charles Bronfman got up and he was waiting for Shamir. He was waiting for Rabin. He was late. And he said, here I am, Charles Bronfman, I have egg on my face. I don't know what to say next. Just a simple, plain, wonderful man. And it's the Max Bronfman and the, Charles Bronfman and Max Fisher of the world that are stand up and be counted Jews. Mm-hmm. And then again, they probably didn't know what was going on in the 40s either.
We sort of skipped over.
We didn't want it.
We sort of skipped over the Depression years as well. I know you said you moved around a lot. Do you remember the Depression years?
Not really. I was very young. I remember my aunts and uncles living with us, and I remember we always had food to eat. But I don't remember that we were striving for anything. We weren't going to country clubs. We weren't going to workout clubs. There weren't any. Right. We weren't going to keep up with the Joneses. We were just going.
But you lived in a clean house and you had
food. Wonder. My mother was a crazy clean. Not but crazy clean, but uncles, she was wonderful. Not like that.
The aunts and uncles lived with you not because of the Depression.
They lived with us because they were all single and weren't married. Right. And they had a home with us.
Right.
And the cutest part is that although things went well for everybody living there, we had a cousin from Windber, Pennsylvania, and it turned out her name was Ethel Rose, and she's Rube Schlesinger's sister, okay? And she went to Pitt, and she stayed with us.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
So you had an open door policy?
Yeah, we had a place for her, which was kind of wonderful. Mm-hmm.
Did your father continue to work during the Depression?
Oh, my God, yes. During the Depression in 1929 is when he started the New Diamond Market. And he got Sam Glick and Alex Harris a few years later. And that I told you, they kept him on. They were always good to my dad.
Why do you say that they were good to him? I thought your father started it.
He started it, but didn't have the money to do the buying of the meats.
Oh, I see.
The meats was the big factor.
Yeah.
Putting that food on the shelves there, but the market took off from Go. It was in Murphy's 5 and 10,
yes.
And it took off from Go. And that's the main reason that my mother never kept kosher. She knew the kind of caliber meat we were getting from there, and it seemed foolish.
I'm just trying to fill in background.
So
I'm going to sort of skip around a little bit. When you and Alter married, where did you initially settle down?
In an apartment.
In Square Hill?
On Fifth Avenue, 5700, and Amy was born in that apartment. He commuted every day to New Kensington, and I went downtown. And I used my little shop as my haven, so I didn't have to move to New Kensington, because from 1938, his family, when he graduated from Alderdice, moved to New Kensington.
Mm-hmm.
So he was a resident in New Kensington.
I may be repeating myself, but your mom opened this?
No, I opened it.
You opened it, and then your mother came to work for you.
My mother came to work with me after Amy was born. We didn't think exactly alike. It was always a little bit of stuff there. But that's not abnormal.
That's right.
And then from Fifth Avenue,
we moved down for 11 months to another apartment that had the second bedroom. And then I was walking on Walnut Street and wheeling Amy, when I ran into Cy Lauf, that was Dr. Leonard Lauf's wife. And she said to me, "What are you doing?" I said, "Looking for a house, and I don't like to be crazy about looking for houses." She says, "There's a house on Murdoch Road." And she said, "It's got marvelous possibilities." So I called Ethel Rosen, who lived with my mother, who was an agent. And I said, "Ethel, let's go look at that house." Looked at the house. There wasn't one straight floor in the house. I mean, the whole house was like a roller coaster on almost a 45-degree angle. There was a sink in the back room and a complete full bathroom on the second. No powder room. Nothing like that. No entrance hall. Nothing. And then we took my Uncle Lou Harvey over the building. And Lou was the one who built our main road, and he built Aylesboro Lane and the Center Court Apartments. Uncle Lou looked at it, he says, "I like the house, it's bright." We bought the house for $18,500. We put more than that into it the first time. And in 1967, we added on 10 rooms. Three floors. Foundations to hold up the rest of the house. It's been a very happy house for us, which my husband would like to sell now, but he can forget it because I could not even move my scripts up. It's my happy house and I'm happy there.
While you were growing up, were there vacations or camps or anything like that?
Well, I was growing up.
And did you attend?
I went with my dad and mother to Atlantic City every summer because that was fun, the last 2 weeks of the summer.
Did your brothers also go?
My brothers went to camp. And I was like already, you know, in college, so it was fun to go away with them then. And I was never a camper. I tried Camp Louise, I think, at the age of 13. I used to get homesick. And my Amy is not a camper, my first. She, that's another whole story. It's a very funny story.
You can tell it.
Oh, well, I think I should do it in sequence about vacation. And then when I was really, you know, a swinger, I went on vacations with another girl. We took an unchartered flight in 1950 and stayed at the Saxony Hotel, which was plenty expensive in the summertime, too, but elegant.
Where is the Saxony?
In Miami itself. And how certain things change. Amy, Audrey was in New York, and he was prosperous and busy and met a lot of friends in the market. And he called me, he says, I just enrolled Amy in a camp. I said, really? What's the name of the camp? He said, the Pocono Highlands. I said, well, I better call there and see if it's a uniform camp, if it's not a uniform camp. So I called there, and I talked to Mr. Weinberg. He was charming. He said, just go into Saks and buy her clothes. At that point, I should have known what kind of a camp it was. It was a camp for mostly divorced kids, spoiled brats, Japs, if you want to call them. And Amy called, and she said, I'm going to take an overdose of chlorotrimetine. I want to come out, which go up for her 1 week after camp. And that was Amy's experience with camp. But my other kids were all campers. Every single one of them, Linwood. Every single one of them. They were marvelous campers. And they had a lot of fun, you know, with what they did. And we went as a family to Margate, New Jersey. 17 glorious years. We had a whole crowd that went with us.
That wasn't with your parents.
That's with my kids. And I used to take the housekeeper.
So your children went to summer part of the year, to camp part of the summer, and then you took family vacations.
Yes.
And when you say you were with a whole crowd of people, were they family or friends?
Elliot and Jean Sport, and Frieda and Milton Goldman. He's a doctor from... We're such friends. Gene Swartz's brother is the chief of the Atlantic City Hospital, Milton Ackerman. Such friends that we get invited all over the country to their kids' weddings and so forth. Lester and Shirley Pete from Punxsutawney. Just Yale and Margie Feingold. Just wonderful people. We just had fun, Jane and Alan Broth. Fun. Bud Lazarus and Helen. Last from early on, and Betty Pearlstein and Danny, who owned Glassworks. Super. Those were the good old days at Margate, New Jersey, the White Sands. That's where I started to jog in 1972, along that beach. That's all right.
Mm-hmm. So you were ahead of everybody else.
Oh, that's how long I've been running, but not with such a good, flair anymore. Sunday,
4 miles. Janet, if you wouldn't mind, would you have any, could you talk about your ailments?
About my cancer?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, I don't mind at all. I did the Race for the Cure because Nancy Brinker's an A5.
How long have you been involved in that? It's been 2 or 3 years.
Yes, but I missed the first year.
Okay.
And I think I missed the first year because there was a golf tournament, mother and
missed
daughter,
what?
The Race for the Cure. So that sort of blanked out in my mind. That's when Pat Seiger was one of the chairmen. Okay, but the next year I got sort of very involved because I knew Nancy. And Nancy, and I knew about her, she's from Peoria, Illinois, and I knew that Allie Goodman was her mother, and a very close friend of Nancy Heller, whom I served 6 years with on the Alpha Epsilon Phi National Board. And when we were at the point in 1991, I went on the national convention floor and stated that I felt that Alpha Epsilon Phi should adopt breast cancer. And everybody loved it, but we had a president who was a single girl who shoved the whole project under the carpeting, and Zeta Tau Alpha picked up the project. And when I did see Nancy, she was here last year, in 1994, I said to her, "Nancy, I'm a little annoyed because since when is breast cancer elitist? What do you care if 35, 40 national groups adopt breast cancer? That's so much more for research and development." No. So it became a selfish thing with another sorority to bicker with. So we just dropped that. But I would support breast cancer to the hills. And anyhow, let me go back to the beginning. And from there, they give you and your kid a self-examination thing. Well, I couldn't be bothered with that. I mean, I would go to my doctor and the OB-GYN, and they should know that. July 1, I'm getting dressed, and I say to Alder,
"Which July?
This past July, 94. You want to feel this?" "No," he says, "you know I hate that." A little pee.